All right, so turn your Bibles to Genesis 32, and while you're doing that, I'm just going to review the entire book of Genesis up until now. So, Genesis 1, you all know this. God creates everything. It's all great. Genesis 2, it goes further into detail about that creation. Still great. Genesis chapter 3, we mess up, right? Adam sins, all that good stuff. And then Genesis 3:15 is the promise that's echoed throughout this book. What is it? Seed of the woman will crush the head of the snake, right? All right, so scroll on down a long ways, and you get to Abraham, right? Abraham has two sons, Isaac and Ishmael. Then Isaac has two sons later on, named Jacob and Esau. And that is the part that we're in right now. We're in the Jacob and Esau part. So, do you guys know this story, Jacob and Esau? Yes, no? No? I heard some no's, so I'm just going to review it because I was going to do it anyways. All right, so Jacob and Esau are born. Esau is the older brother by like 2 minutes, right? So, and whenever Esau comes out, Jacob has him by the ankle, which is why he's called Jacob, which means ankle grabber, or in other words, liar. So, later on in their lives, Jacob completely rips Esau off and makes him sell his entire inheritance for a bowl of soup. Yeah. Must have been. So then after that, whenever they're older, and Isaac is about to die, Jacob then goes and cheats Esau out of his blessing, which in Hebrew culture was like a big deal. I don't really know what it means, honestly. I didn't look into that. I should have. I'm sorry. So Jacob cheats Esau out of that too. And then Esau starts comforting himself by plotting Jacob's murder, how he is going to kill Jacob. So at this point, Jacob runs away. He runs away to his uncle Laban's house. And his uncle Laban kind of gives him what he had coming, and he rips him off, and he changes how much he's paying him 10 times. So then, eventually, God tells Jacob, go back home. So that's where we pick up here in Genesis 32. So, if you'll all stand, in honor of God's word, I'm going to read Genesis 32. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, in the country of Edom, instructing them, thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I might find favor in your sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him, and the flocks and the herds and camels, into two camps, thinking, if Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who has said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of these deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good, and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servants, every drove by itself. And he said to his servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove. He instructed the first, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks, to whom do you belong? Where are you going? And who are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau. And moreover, he is behind us. He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves. You shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And moreover, you shall say, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me. And afterward I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present passed on ahead of him, and he stayed himself that night in the camp. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for the day has broken. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. Then he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, for I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. And may God add his blessing to the reading and hearing of his word. That was a lot of reading. I'm tired, sermon done. Kidding. All right, so we're going to go in on verse 1. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. I really don't know how that went down, and I think that deserves more than one verse, because I'm just wondering, did they have like buttons that said, I am an angel of God? Or did they just walk up, hi, we're the angels of God? I don't really know. I feel like that deserves more than just a verse, but it is kind of important to note that the angels of God met Jacob. Jacob didn't meet them, so they were actively searching, and they found him. Verse 2. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. So he called the name of that place Mahanim, which means two camps, or God's camp. So, verse 3. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. I'm just going to keep going. Instructing them, thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. Now, I have a brother who's older than me. I have never called my brother Lord. Because whenever you call someone Lord, that just means you don't want to fight them. And I love my brother, but he can't take me. I'm just being honest. In case he's listening, you know it's true. So, moving on. I have oxen and donkeys, flocks, male servants and female servants. I have sent to tell my Lord, again, doesn't want to get beat up, in order that I might find favor in your sight. So now, he's kind of just telling Esau that a present is on the way. He's got the Escalade, he's got the Biscreen TV, he's got the hot tub, and he's going to let him be in the music video. He's kind of like a Hebrew rapper, sending a present. So really, we're going to really get into it in verse 9. I'm kind of just blitzing through all this stuff. Verse 6, and the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him. Now, this is not like his family, because it specifies those are men. And whenever there's 400 dudes coming at you, generally that's not a good thing, because they are going to kill you, especially if your brother doesn't like you at this point. So, moving on. I'm not worthy... Nope, that's the wrong verse. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, rightfully so, because he's probably going to die. He divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking, if Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. Now this is Jacob being honest about the fact that he is a coward. He is deathly afraid of his brother Esau, and he's probably going to die. But this way, only half of his stuff dies with him. Pretty smart thinking, you would think. Now, here's where we're going to slow down. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. Now, this is Jacob's prayer. And really, it speaks a lot to those of us who aren't very good at prayer, because this is the longest prayer and pretty much the first one so far that is recorded in Genesis. And it's definitely the first time Jacob prayed. So it speaks to us because he learns to pray out of necessity, whereas we can learn to pray by practice and patience and, you know, all that stuff. But part of the reason why it was so hard for Jacob is because he didn't have the Bible. We're given this, and this is good for us, because prayer and the Bible just go hand in hand. You can't really have one without the other. It's a lot like a conversation. Like if I was talking to Amber, if I'm just talking to Amber, that doesn't work. Amber has to talk back or it's not a conversation, and neither one of us really gain anything. In the same way, the Bible is God talking to us. If you ever wonder why God doesn't speak to you, he has. He has 66 books of him speaking to you. You just got to pick it up and read it. But at the same time, if you just read this and this is all you do, you're not going to get anywhere. It's not going to stick. So what you have to do is you read this and in response, you talk to God. Now, the first thing Jacob says in his prayer is, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac. So he's acknowledging that this God has been faithful to his family thus far. And then he says, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. So he's also restating that God promised to him that he would go and have good things happen. Then in verse 10, he picks up again. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Now that's just honest humility. He's acknowledging that he is not worthy. And then in the second part, he says that he just crossed over with a stick, essentially. It's not hard to find a stick. They're all outside. He didn't even have two sticks. He just had one stick whenever he crossed the Jordan. And now he has all this wealth that has been given to him by the grace of God. Verse 11. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me. That again is Jacob just being really honest that he's afraid. Something that works out very well when you talk with God. If you're honest with God, it'll work out better for you in the end than if you try to weasel, because God knows when you're lying, right? Another thing about that phrase is essentially what he's saying is save me. And honestly, a lot of us need to say that. I'm probably not supposed to say this, but a lot of us in this room, maybe not a lot, but some of us are going to hell. And don't look around. I don't know who it is. I don't claim to know who it is. You won't either. But deep down in your heart, you know if that's you. So a lot of us need to pray that. Save me. It's just part of it. That's what you have to start out with. Because if you think Esau with 400 men is scary, should think about God once. Next half of that verse, he prays for the women and the children. This is the first time Jacob has thought about someone other than himself. Which just shows the grace of God. Because Jacob was a horrible person. Like if horrible was here, he'd need a ladder. So if God, and this isn't even the full grace of God. This is just God giving him a little bit. That now he can think of people other than himself. Verse 12. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Again, he's going back to God's promises. which is incredibly important to do, because you can claim the word of God for yourself. There's a lot of this in here applies to you. Not all of it, but a lot of it. So whenever you read your Bible and you pray to God, pray that some of the things God says he'll do will happen to you. And they probably will. All right, verse 13. I'm going to speed up a little bit more, and then we're going to really chill in verse 22. So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau. 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, "Pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove." He instructed the first, "When Esau my brother meets you and asks you, 'To whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you?' Then you shall say, 'They belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau, and moreover, he is behind us.'" Now this is a magnificent attempt to suck up. I don't have that much stuff, much less that much stuff to spare to give to my brother who hates me. So I'm going to assume that that was actually quite a bit of his fortune. So to say, "Esau, here's pretty much everything I have, don't kill me," shows that he's really desperate. He does not want to die. Yes, Alan. No, it's not all of it. It's a pretty good portion, though, because that's like 550 animals. So it's quite a bit, but Jacob was a very wealthy man. So it's just a lot. We're going to go with a lot. Yeah, but he also said that he divided into two camps so that if one died, the other will live. So I wouldn't say that it's exactly half, but it is a lot. We're definitely going to go with that one. So, and then another thing that he tells them all is he says, be sure to mention that this is from Jacob. So he's like, here is a new car. Hey, this is from Jacob, by the way. Then here's a new house from Jacob. And you can also be in the music video with Jacob. Because you know, Jacob, your brother, whom you love, right? So then, moving on. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us, for he thought, I may appease him with a present that goes ahead of me, and afterwards I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. Now that's just the straight up truth. He's finally telling himself that maybe Jacob will love me or not kill me if I give him all this stuff. So the present passed on ahead of him, and he stayed himself that night in the camp. The same night he arose, and he took his two wives, two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else he had, and Jacob was left alone. It's important to note that his prayer there did not get answered. Like, God did not give a response, right? So really, everything that Jacob did was essentially just him saying, okay, God, I know you got this, but I'm just going to cover my back just in case. Like, that's really what Jacob did with all that. And honestly, isn't that what we do? Like, God, please help me with this problem. And then you proceed to try to fix it. And then you end up making it worse. Most of the time, we make it worse, right? So that's what Jacob did. And here is God's response. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. God comes and beats him up. Like, that's what happens. Jacob says, God, please save my life. God comes and beats him up. And this isn't like Jacob was like 20. Jacob's 80 or 90 here. So this is pretty much my worst nightmare. I'm 80 or 90, and I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom again, and some dude comes and puts me in a headlock and starts wrestling with me all night. That's not going to be pleasant. So, honestly, if a lot of us have this picture of God as whenever you say you have a problem, he'll come and he'll give you cookies, he'll give you milk and all this stuff. But honestly, if you want a God that's going to take you to the spa, you need to find a new God. Honestly. So, at this point, God's beating him up all night, and he just kind of made himself strong enough to beat him up, but not so strong that he wins. Immediately. And when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. So, God essentially takes every bit of strength that Jacob has. All of it. Because without a hip, you can't really wrestle. And I imagine that Jacob wasn't too pleased because he's like 80 or 90, so he's hurting everywhere else already. That's just one more nail in the coffin. So, I mean, Jacob has no strength. And then, verse 26, then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." That is good. Because when Jacob has no more strength left, all he can do is cling to Jesus. And that is what we need to do. He does eventually. He doesn't know right now. Or he might know right now, but he figures it out at some point. But really, this is all we can do whenever we have no strength left, is cling to Jesus. And if we do that before we lose all our strength, it saves us a little bit. Well, he probably figured it out. You're probably right. Well, if some dude came and wrestled with you all night, the dude's get pretty tough, obviously. So, I mean, I guess that kind of narrows it down. This is obviously God. So, and then he says, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name will no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Now, the last time someone asked Jacob his name was Abraham, his father. And this was whenever Jacob stole Esau's blessing from Abraham. And he lied and he said his name was Esau. This time Jacob tells the truth. He's admitting that all he is a no good liar. And when God sees that, he renames him. And he changes him from that no good liar to someone who will eventually found a nation that is still here today. And that's like, what, 4,000 years later, John? Yeah, about 4,000 years. Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." And in the New Testament, Jesus does this too. He said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" Because whenever you ask Jesus a question, usually he answers with a question. And also, another reason Jesus doesn't answer him is because in the Hebrew culture, if you tell someone your name, they have a little bit of power over you. You can't have power over Jesus. Jesus is the boss. It's a Hebrew thing. I don't really know it. Don't ask me. And there he blessed him. Another thing that this whole wrestling thing points out is how God deals with sin in our lives. Because God doesn't just say, "Oh, your sin's gone now, you're good." He'll wrestle with us all night. And that takes a long time in reality. It's not just one night. It might be years. God wrestles with you and your sin. But eventually, you overcome and you become something better. Verse 30. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, which means face of God, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." Now, eventually, there's going to come a time, Paul tells us, that we are going to see God face to face. Jacob got to experience it during his lifetime, and he walked away from it limping, being a changed man, walking differently, even having a new name. So imagine the day whenever we're going to be in heaven and we see God face to face. I just can't wait. That's just me. The sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. Now, Jews and Israelites have a lot of weird dietary restrictions, like they can't eat pork or whatever. But this one right here is out of reverence, not out of some weird tradition. And most of them are. This is saying that where Jacob got touched and changed, that's pure. So we don't eat that. That's really saying a lot. Now, I really struggled with the conclusion of this sermon because apparently I went way too fast. So I'm already done. But really, there's no resolution in this passage because Jacob still has a brother who he doesn't know if he's going to kill him or not. And now he's limping. So if he wants to kill him, one old guy against 400 young dudes, that's not going to work out very well in his favor. So honestly, there's no conclusion promised here, and there shouldn't be any conclusion promised in our lives. Because if you think about it, there's shows on TV that in the beginning a problem is presented, 30 minutes later it's resolved. So we live in a culture that tells us that everything will be resolved very quickly, but that's not how God works. And honestly, this has even infected some pastors that'll get up in a pulpit and an hour later they'll tell you that everything will be great if you accept Jesus. That's not true. Jesus doesn't promise that. It's not promised here. It's just not a thing. Because with Jesus, you get a wrestling match. You get a guy who's going to beat you all night until you become a better person.